Welcome to OU.org and www.etshalom.com. My name is Yitzhak Etshalom. It's my pleasure to be studying Sefer Shmuel with you. We are now in Shmuel Bet Perek Yod Dalad. And just to recap, because Perek Yod Gimel and Yod Dalad are very closely associated, in Perek Yod Gimel, subsequent to the rape of Tamar by her quasi-relative brother Amnon, Avshalom, who was her direct brother, took vengeance on Amnon and had Amnon killed. Avshalom then ran away, and David's house is beginning to fall apart. Amnon is dead. His own son has died from the affair with Bathsheba. Now Avshalom is gone. And now Yoav, David's trusted cousin and chief of staff, steps in to try to repair things. Vayeda Yoav ben Tsruya ki lev ha-melech alav shalom. So Yoav knew that David, lev ha-melech alav shalom, can be interpreted in two opposite ways. One is that he's holds a grudge against him, but more likely it's the opposite, which is that the king is still thinking about Avshalom and missing him. So Yoav tries to bring them together. And this is the second example, and we have the first one just two prakim ago, of a juridical parable, as we will see. Vayishlach Yoav tkoa, v'kach misham isha chachama. This is the second isha chachama that we have in Sefer Shmuel. The first one was Avigail. There will be another one in Perek Chaf. This one, like the one in Perek Chaf, has no name, at least not that we know of. So he sent a message to Tkoa, which is an area very familiar to David, not far from Beit Lechem, and he took a wise woman from there, Vayomer Leha, Hit Ablina. He told her to immediately go into mourning. V'liv shina v'gdei evel, and immediately put on clothes of mourning. V'al tasuchi shemen, and don't anoint yourself. V'ayit ki isha zayamim rabim, mita'abelet almeit, and be, for quite a while, like this kind of woman who is mourning for the dead. In other words, put on an act as if you're mourning. V'atel hamelech, and then you should come to the king. V'dibart elav kadavar hazeh, and tell him the following. V'yasim Yoav et hadvarim b'fian. Yoav told her exactly what to say. So we don't know what Yoav said, but that's okay because we're going to find it out when she comes to the king. V'tomar ha'ishat ko'it al hamelech. So the woman comes to the king and she says, V'tipol ala peha artza v'tishtachu, and she fell at her, on her face and prostrated herself before the king. V'tomar hoshia hamelech. And what is it that she said? She said, save, O King. Now we find several times in Sefer Melachim, and also here in Shmuel, that in ordinary citizens are able to just walk into the king, approach the king, and plead their case and ask the king to intervene on their behalf. And evidently this was not an uncommon practice in the Near East. We find it in the case of Avshalom in the next parak, that Avshalom will be standing outside of the king's palace and bemoaning the fact, as part of his charade, that nobody is able to enter the king's palace anymore to talk to him. The king is not listening, which means it was the normal practice to do so. So now, this woman came into the king and said, save me. She's got a problem, wants the king to intervene. Vayomer la hamelech malach. Little play on words. Vatomer aval isha almana ani vayamot ishi. Aval here doesn't mean but it's just sort of like a pardon. I am a widow. My husband has died. In other words, the sense is that my husband has died recently, and I'm an almana, which means I am without protection. Ulishif chatcha shnei vanim. I have two sons, or I had two sons. Vayinatsu shnehem basadeh. The two of them were fighting. Ve'ein matzil b'neim. Nobody was breaking them up. Vayakol ha'echad et ha'echad vayamet oto. And one of them hit the other, smote the other, and killed him. This, of course, takes us back to one of the very first stories in Tanakh, the story of Cain and Hevel. Two brothers fighting in the field, and one kills the other. And you would think that perhaps David should recognize that there's a little bit of an overly familiar story here, but we'll see. V'nei kama chol ha'mishpacha al shifchatecha. And now the entire family has come to me, stood over me, as it were. Vayomru tni et makei achiv unemiteu benefesh achiv asherharag. So she said, give us the killer, the brother killer, and we'll kill him for the person of his brother who he killed. In other words, one of our kin has been killed, so we have to take vengeance. The vengeance will be from the other son. And this to us sounds bizarre and strange and barbaric, but we have to remember that within the context of a blood vengeance, of the Goel Hadam, it says not unusual, it just seems to be a weird extension where if one brother kills the other, that brother now is going to be killed by the rest of the family. And so what they want to do is to kill the one heir that she has left. Here's a woman with two sons. And by the way, this should also sound familiar to David from his own family, the story of Naomi and her two sons, etc. There's a lot of red flags should be going up. And she does not put it in terms of her being left alone without any children, but rather they will extinguish her coal, in other words, her light that's left, that will not allow my husband to have any sort of a name or a remnant on earth. I have to remember that in the ancient world, there were two components which allowed a person to experience immortality. And they are children and land. And that is the subtext of all of Megillat Rut. And as a result, this woman is saying that if one, I have no husband, two sons, obviously not married yet, one son killed the other, now there's one son left, and they want to kill him. So there will be nothing left, and my husband's name will disappear. That is sort of the subtext of what she's presenting. So what happens? The king says, go home, and I will take care of you. I will command regarding you. This is the formal statement of the pardon me, the sin is mine. In other words, she's saying, all of the sins are mine, and your house is innocent, etc. It's just a formal kind of a statement of acceptance, and she's thanking the king for what he's doing. So the king seems to say, whoever it is who's giving you trouble, bring him to me, and he won't trouble you anymore. So she says, you should remember Hashem, and don't allow this Goel Adam to destroy. And so they shouldn't kill my son. And she's repeating her request. He says, by God's life, that even a hair won't fall from his head. Which of course takes us back to the story of Yonatan and Shaul, which is a real statement when Yonatan was under threat. But we have to remember that when David is saying this, he's taking the same oath, which we also know played out very well for Yonatan, that he wasn't killed. And then she said, let me say something else. And so he said, go ahead and speak. So in other words, she got her first point across. She got the king to listen to her case, to agree to intervene, and then when she pushed him, he took an oath that he would intervene. That was the last thing. She pushed him to take an oath that he would intervene on her behalf. And then she said, I have something else to say. So why are you doing the same thing to God's people? So why are you speaking this way, that you're not returning the one that you've rejected? In other words, she's now parlaying that her two sons are akin to Yonatan, to Avshalom and Amnon. And now she's playing the we are nothing sort of card. We're all going to die. We're like water that just goes on the ground, it doesn't gather, doesn't create, we don't amount to anything. And God is not going to save a soul. And here, God is thinking, as it were, as a way in which he will not push away anybody. In other words, she's talking about Avshalom. This is why I came to speak to you. He says, that's why I came to speak to you. Because everybody is afraid on this account, and so I said, perhaps I'll come speak to the king, and maybe he'll do what I request. In other words, I've come to request, not for my own sons, who at this point, maybe already we've figured out don't exist, but rather on behalf of your sons. Now, what is the king's reaction? Sorry, כי ישמע המלך להציל את אמתו מכף האיש להשמיד אותי ואת בני האחד מנחלת אלוהים, just as the king will listen to me to save me from that man, that relative, that fictitious relative, who wants to destroy me and my son together. ותאמר משפחתך הנה דבר אדוני המלך למנוחה, כי כמלך אלוהים כן אדוני המלך לשמוע הטוב והרע, ואדוני אלוהיך יימך. And then she blesses him and says, and your word is God's word as it were, and God is with you. And now the king realizes that he has been sort of trapped. And for the second time, somebody has presented him with a case where he has passed judgment, and now he's been turned around and said, but this is really about you. So he said, the king then turns around and says, don't keep anything from him. I'm going to ask you a question, tell me the honest truth. Right? She says, speak. Was Yoav involved in all of this? The woman responds and says, by your life, she takes an oath, if it would be possible to go a little bit to the right or to the left from what you've said. In other words, you hit it exactly on. It's Yoav who commanded me, he told me all of these words, and you hit the nail right on, not to the right, to the left. But Yoav, she's defending Yoav. Yoav did it in order to cause the Sabev this thing. But you are wise like an angel. You know exactly what's going on. We couldn't fool you. So now she's done. She's done her part. This Isha Chachama has come and presented a case, and convincingly, so that the king passed judgment. Effectively, when one son kills another, that first son has to be spared, if for no other reason than to keep the family alive. And now she turns the same thing back about Avshalom, even though there are other brothers. And now the king has been, as it were, trapped by his own words, or hoisted by his own petard. And now the king turned to Yoav and said, okay, I've done what you've tricked me into saying, but I've done it, and now go bring Avshalom back. Yoav fell on his face, and he blessed the king, and he said, now I know that you favor me because you've done exactly what I asked. So Yoav went all the way up to Geshur, again on the other side of the Kinneret, and brought Avshalom back. Now Avshalom has, what's Avshalom feeling at this point? What's Yoav feeling at this point? What is David feeling at this point? Well, let's speculate a little bit, as much as we can. Avshalom doesn't necessarily know about all of this subterfuge that Yoav is involved in. And Avshalom doesn't really even know how David reacted to his killing of Amnon. Avshalom only knows one thing, that for 2 years Amnon had been guilty of abusing Tamar, and the king had not done anything to him. And he was still a favored crown prince, we assume, but certainly a favored member of the noble family. Avshalom must have assumed that once he killed Amnon, he would be disfavored. Now he's been brought back. Has been brought back for judgment. Has been brought back to be shamed. Has been brought back in order to be now favored, because in retrospect he did the right thing. He doesn't know. In the meantime, Yoav perhaps figures that David has really seen the light and understood that he was guilty of a sin of omission and not properly chastising Amnon, and that's why this happened. And now he's accepting the responsibility and wants Avshalom to come back. What does David understand from this? That really is unclear. So let's see what happens. So the king chooses some sort of a power of middle path, which really turns out to be the worst of all. He says, let Avshalom come and go to his house and not see me. That's exactly what happened. Avshalom went to his house. He didn't see the king. So Avshalom came all the way back from Geshur, assuming that he would be greeted in some way. Maybe his father would chastise him. But the very worst thing happened, which was the king ignored him and put him away, meaning distanced him. In the meantime, parenthetically, we can get an insight into David's pain and tension in all of this. Avshalom lo haya ish yafeh b'chol Yisrael lehalel meod. There was nobody who you could praise about his beauty as much as Avshalom. Mikaf raglo v'yad kod kodo lo haya v'mum. from his head to his, from his feet to his head, he had no blemish, he was perfect. And it was from days to days, whether that means once a year, as the Gemara in Nazir suggests, that he would shave his head, kichaved alav, in other words, that according to the Masach Nazir, he was a Nazir Olam, who shaves whenever his hair gets too heavy. And it turned out to be 200 shkalim worth of hair that he would shave. He had a beautiful head of hair that he would shave every so often. And Avshalom himself had three sons and a daughter. Her name was Tamar. Every Tamar that we meet in this family, from the Tamar of Yehuda to the Tamar Bat David, Tamar Bat Avshalom, are all beautiful women. And this is a parenthetic statement about how attractive Avshalom is, which may tell us why David is ready to have him come back, and David himself is conflicted about it, so has him come back, but does not see him. In the meantime, back to our narrative, Vayeshev Avshalom Yerushalayim Shnatayim Yamim Ufnei HaMelech Lo Ra'ah. For 2 years he sat there. Now that's an interesting number, because it was 2 years between the time that Amnon committed his heinous act and Avshalom acted, and now it's another 2 years between the time that the king has Avshalom come back and Avshalom again acts. Avshalom is a patient man. He waits. Vayishlach Avshalom al Yoav, Yishloach Oto al HaMelech V'Lava L'Avo Eilav. So Avshalom sent a message to Yoav, I want to see you because I want to come see the king. Yoav didn't respond. Vayishlach Od Shinit V'Lava L'Avo. A second time he sent, and Avshalom did not respond. Yoav did not respond. Go see Yoav's field over there, next to mine. He has barley there. Go burn it down. Avshalom wanted to get Yoav's attention. He wouldn't respond to his messenger, so he burnt down his field. So it worked. Yoav came to Avshalom to his house. He said, why did your servants burn down my field with a fire? So Yoav says, Avshalom says very simply, I sent a message to you. I said, come here, and I want to send a message to the king. And my message to the king would have been, why did I come all the way from Geshur? Tovli od ani sham. It was better for me there. And this, the message that I wanted to send to the king was that it was much better for me to be there. If I have a sin, then come see me and kill me. Again, the worst possible thing is to be ignored. And by the way, this is exactly the message that David sent to Shaul. If you really think that I'm so bad, so bring me in and kill me. This is early on in David's running away from Shaul. And so what happened is that it looks as if everything's been resolved very nicely. Yoav came to the king and told him what happened, and the king called Avshalom, and he came to the king, and he bowed down on his face in front of the king, and the king kissed Avshalom, and it looks like we have some sort of a rapprochement, but we will see all too soon in the beginning of the next podcast that that is illusory, and that the die has been cast, and Avshalom is going to lead in a very different direction. Avshalom waited 2 long years, and evidently it was too little and too late, and now we will see where things take us in the further dismantling or unraveling of Beit David. Everyone should have a wonderful day. We'll pick up with Perek Tet Vav in the next podcast.